What a fascinating panel. Really interesting presentations of collections and efforts to make these resources available. When in 1992, I was working at Emory on a project to develop a gopher site, I was convinced that gopher was going to change the way libraries functioned. About a year later, Mosaic entered on the scene, and we gave up gopher for the World Wide Web. I was still convinced that the internet would change how we do our work in libraries. In 1995, Nicholas Negroponte wrote, quote, "The information superhighway is more than a shortcut to every book in the Library of Congress. It is creating a totally new global social fabric." I didn't know what that was then. Maybe he didn't even know what it was. But if you fast forward to today, we see that the internet is a means by which we publish, discover and access information, engage in rituals, communicate, transact business, establish an attempt to secure our multiple identities, seek entertainment, receive education, do research, find community, experience bullying and harassment, propagate misinformation, wage war, commit crimes. There's no part of our lives that is not affected by this digital age. And these are not new things that the internet invented, but we now do them in a networked kind of environment. In 2000, the Library of Congress published LC21, a digital strategy for the Library of Congress. And in that, they really talked about how a digitization process was radically transforming the way we interact with information. And they were projecting that it would radically change the work of the Library of Congress. If you look at the National Archives website, you can look at their strategic plan, updated in 2000, and see that they were talking about the same thing. David has talked about where they are in that process of implementation now. One of the things that strikes me is that from that time period, we were very focused on the processes of digitizing, of making things available. We didn't at that time, and I'm not sure even now, do we fully understand what it means to live in a digital age, and how that affects what we do in our libraries and archives. One of the themes that I've heard from our panelists, from Jeanette and Dan and Alberto, is efforts to engage our communities of users in interesting ways. One of the things that that I think has become more apparent in an internet age is kind of an empowerment of users to produce their own websites, their own information. If we think back a few years ago, Wikipedia was just entering on the scene. And I had a conversation with one of our faculty members who was lamenting its growth, and particularly lamenting the intrusion of Wikipedia into the classroom. For all of its problems, what he was really objecting to, I think, was a difference in epistemology. If we think about a commercially produced encyclopedia like Britannica, the model is that you find authorities, scholars who are going to write articles, and through their expertise, they're going to have a means of authenticating, authorizing the knowledge, or at least the encyclopedia article that appears in that encyclopedia. Wikipedia turned it around and said, no, we think knowledge, or at least encyclopedia articles, can be produced by a social process, by gathering together people who don't claim to be experts, but who can engage with each other in the process of creating an article. The process that Dan and Jeanette have described is a little like that. It's kind of turning the epistemology on its head and saying that these groups are able to engage with each other and create their stories. They're saying there isn't just one story, there isn't just one record, there isn't just one identity. They're working together in ways to produce multiple stories. And that introduces some interesting challenges for us. If we think about that, we're presented with questions of how do we choose what gets added to an archive? Who gets to choose? Who gets to authenticate? In an era in which we encounter fake news, alternative facts, how do we judge the difference between information or knowledge that is disinformation, propaganda, or simply the story of a group from a different worldview? That's a real challenge for us, I think. And it'll be interesting to see how these two efforts grapple with that. The other really interesting thing that I want to pull out of this is that libraries have been really focused on the process of becoming digital, but I'm not sure that we've really understood the changing needs of our users. Lawrence Lessig, in his book Remix, talks about an encounter that he had with Jack Valenti when he was debating him at Stanford. And Valenti asked the students, how many have downloaded music from Napster? And roughly 90% of the students in attendance had admitted that they had. And Valenti asked one of the students, well, how do you justify stealing? And the student said, well, everybody does it. If everybody does it, it can't be wrong. Lessig goes on to say, in a world in which technology begs all of us to create and spread creative work differently from how it was created and spread before, what kind of moral platform will sustain our kids when their ordinary behavior is deemed criminal? That's a really interesting question. And I think Lessig is kind of pointing to issues that we all confront. Your encouragement that we clarify and define standard rights terminology, or that we follow copyright, that's really important. But I'm not sure that's where our users are. In fact, I think they have left us behind, and that's an interesting challenge that I think we need to address. I really liked Alberto's focus on reading and a kind of formative engagement. One of the issues that that we face in a digital age is that reading online is different than reading in print. Research indicates that we scan much more. When we're reading a web page, we typically read in an F fashion. We scan the top line, scan down, scan across about halfway, and then we move on. There's some good research that indicates that this is a new kind of reading that facilitates dealing with the mass of information, the mass of media that we have. And it's very effective for discovery, for scanning, for all of those things that help us to locate and access information. It is different, however, from the kind of deep reading, the formative reading that I think you are interested in, and I know a number of our faculty are really concerned about. So how do we balance those, and probably how do we teach both? I think really both are essential. The balance is really going to be a tricky thing for us. The other last thing I want to say has to do with the kind of containers that we think about. When I read an online journal, it looks for all the world like a print journal. When I look at a lot of the objects that we've displayed here, or think about an ebook, why are there pages? Why do we think about the container in the way it is? There is a style of reading that Franco Moretti calls distant reading that is done across an entire corpus using computational analysis. In order to do that, the containers that we create get in the way. We need to think about when those containers facilitate our use of the content and when they get in the way. That's probably enough. I want to invite our panelists to join me here at the table and open the floor for conversation.